I'm Joyce Maynard, and this is Telling Your Story.
As some of you may know, in addition to recording these podcasts for you, I teach real-life classes with real-life students. And when I do, we have one big advantage. I get to read the writer's work. It's a big advantage for them and for me in understanding what they need as writers. And I can't do that with the work of the people who are listening right now, but I'm going to invite you in to a class that I taught, and you can imagine that you're in the room with us. So picture the scene. I was at Lake Atitlan, Guatemala, where I teach a week-long workshop once a year to a group of 9 adventuresome women of many different levels of writing who are all dedicated to the challenge, the richly rewarding challenge of telling their own story, writing personal narrative, memoir. Same thing you're interested in yourself because you're listening to this podcast. But one difference with the students who come to work with me in Guatemala is that I get to read their work in advance of their coming to Lake Atitlan, where we work. So I read all the manuscripts, 2,500 words for each person, and I go through them in a couple of ways. And one is I'm looking at the structure of the stories, of course, and thinking how the big arc of the story is laid out. But I'm also looking at the language they use to lay out their stories. And we have a little exercise that we do early on in the week. It's kind of painful for some people, but it's also a really helpful one. And I don't think anybody who's gone through it ever writes quite the same after. So I'm going to invite you to join our group for this particular exercise. So one essential aspect of good writing is shape and structure, creating an arc, having motion, the road trip that I've talked about that takes you from one place to another and lands you somewhere different on the last page, whether it's page 3 or page 300 than you were on the first. And that's a really important aspect of good writing and good storytelling. And that's not what we're going to talk about now. We're going to talk about the, I'll use a cliche here, the building blocks of absolutely everything in writing, which is language, words. I call this the single most painful 15 minutes of my writing instruction with any group, but also probably the 15 minutes that may give you the most bang for your buck, at least as far as your language and your use of language is concerned. So, I read their work, and when I get to a certain kind of phrase, which I call dead language, I put a little wavy line under it, and I put it into a list that I then read out loud to the entire group. The aim is not to shame anybody by identifying some piece of less than earth-shaking prose. The idea is to put together a compendium of a whole lot of dead language, just so you can feel the flatness of it. Usually I ask everybody to close their eyes when I read this list, and you might close your eyes when you listen too. So here comes my talk to the 9 brave women at Lake Atitlan in the spring of 2021. Picture them sitting in a circle with their eyes closed as a whole lot of dead language washes over them. And I'm going to thank in advance all the women whose language, perhaps not at its very best, is represented on this list. I know they will never commit these offenses again. Here you go with the list I call, Can You Draw a Picture of This? Don't feel badly if you are on this list. Just about everybody always is the first time I work with them, not the second or third, certainly not the fourth. And I don't do this in the interest of shaming anybody. I do this because I believe after having this experience, you will be changed in the way that you use language. I've already said that you should write as if every word cost $5. And if it's a $5 word, let it be a good word. So what I'm going to suggest that you do right now is close your eyes. Just let this wash over you. Nurtured my children. An extremely sensitive child. Avoid making eye contact. Bodies contorted by premature adulthood, the symmetry and balance disappearing while our respective imperfections took shape, manifesting outright in bold daylight, dragging us slowly apart. More than my comfort level could handle. Nature's most primitive draw.
violence both threatened and perpetrated, an unreasonable person. Cling to this identity. Sad and dangerous truths paraded alongside liberated ones, resounding echoes from within, a scarred inner child. Adolescence warped us, entertaining stories. The mood was happy. Ever since I was a child, a mutual consensual kind of beauty, my lifelong battle with wanting to please people, put the pieces together, his mischievous glee, shared stories about our days and the commonalities of our very different lives. Interested in politics, everyone was excited, engaged in society, wary but somehow also rooted, the sight of them releasing us from the immediacy of our present, brutally murdered, to socialize, the sense of embarrassment. Relish the wonderful memory, the technicalities of the sport, my once felt affinity for the energy of the City of Roses, scarred, broken, beaten, bruised, and tired, a proven and proud people. Feel his love. Thoughts or feelings of things that would later come true and happen. Revel in my excitement, relieved but also anxious. Just one of the many times I've experienced this sort of knowing in my life. Dismissive, pedantic talks, discussions on an array of topics in the early 70s to get to know him better, saturated in the Christian world, her political activism and large, boisterous family, a bucolic landscape, a therapist of the do-gooder variety, reignited trash talk, life as I knew it, dominate the headlines, a custody arrangement that heavily favored the ex, impending nuptials, a colorful sunset. The opportunity presented itself. Get away from it all. Time to process. In some festive way, full of life and fun. A history of concussions. The added benefit of putting distance between mom's family and ours. Not a racist. For the first time in my young life, placed proudly for display, at the mercy of the world, popular, athletically talented son, mine to care for, a diverse group of friends, something fundamental within me, the primary concern of our parents, superior schools and rich people. So many thoughts started to race through my head. Already uneasy, destiny unwinding backwards, really good or really bad. If I knew then what I know now, equal parts awe and terror, a painful procedure, time on his hands, model citizens, long-suffering, there I remained, silently navigating the challenges of the world, with mock surprise, become agitated, flat-out derelicts, have meaningful conversations, from a safe distance, a fool's errand, my paranoia, working constantly, shady-looking characters, logged endless hours, stood in the face of fear, the agreed-upon summer, task after task, more than she bargained for, their untold stories, three troublemaking sons, time got away, our days were numbered, headed towards civilization, endless delays, quickie divorce, took back their lives, standing bewildered, the contradictory love between parents and their children, the more desirable part of town. Navigated the storm of family chaos. My behavior had an inverse relationship to age, and the poles of the spectrum of responses gradually converged, melding and unifying into varying forms of dismissal. With reverence and careful consideration, feeling more like me, bid a farewell, an interminable cycle of change and repetition. The hell experienced by the nation, accept me into their world. We rolled up our sleeves, hitting us out of anger. A friendly face, their faithful friendship, the poor available soul, at cross purposes with mine, made fast friends, desperation in my eyes, a long journey of emptiness and anger, sorrow, healing, growing old, and making new. You can open your eyes now, and I'm going to ask you a question. That was a very long list. Which phrases that I just finished reading from that very long list, other than the ones that you are responsible for contributing to it, do you remember? there were hundreds of words. Hundreds of words. And there's a reason why you don't remember them. The words and phrases on that list were vague, abstract, sometimes cliches, sometimes not, but non-specific. And I named this list, Can You Draw a Picture of This? And what I want for your writing and for you as a writer is to write in a way that your sentences are remembered. And I'm now going to read you. You can keep your eyes open for this one because it will be much more pleasurable. That is also completely constructed of phrases from the writing of the same writers who contributed to the first list. Here goes. There are dead children everywhere. The dance of the rod and the lure and the fish and me. As the buildings and houses turn to farms and cornfields, we don't say much in the hour and a half drive. His eyes remain intently fixated on the road in front of him, both hands clenching the steering wheel. His knuckles are white. He does not glance in my direction. The grasshopper brown of exposed wood. A day of fishing isn't just about a number. It's about a number of things. It's about watching a grandfather teach his children how to bait a hook. It's about a man who taught a woman how to fish and then built a sporting camp world where they could alight together and do just that. It's also about the lucky space traveler from another planet who discovered that world, gaining an appreciation for the sporting life and those who inhabit it while perfecting her own secret technique. The city educated me and cast me out. Despite the children being unable to make sounds, there were the monitor alarms. If it were you instead of him, you'd be dead already. The best day of your fishing life is happening today. He instructed me to use one sheet at a time so as not to wrinkle the pages. He taught me to use blue and black ink and showed me to angle the sheet of paper toward my right side. He unfolded a three-legged wooden stool with a triangular leather seat tucked away under the desk in one of 1,000 secret nooks. You may not always know what's tugging at the line, but you know what to do when you feel it. I had always been afraid of the dark. That fear went away with this new way of life. I no longer had any energy to be afraid. It was all used up at the hospital. When I answered the ad to be a seasonal server housekeeper at a sporting camp, I didn't know moose antlers from lupin. I looked down because my feet won't stop moving. A delicate tray and tiny blue tin with a picture of a hot air balloon, a treasure to my eye, pretty things being so rare in our home, which is filled with other people's cast-offs and shelves made from cinder blocks and unfinished boards. I watch him roll perfect, practiced joints, separating out the seeds as the cloud of musty scent wafts and expands, enclosing me. He foamed blood at the mouth and some bloody tears as well. I thought of Ebola. I run my hands through my hair. It is blunt, choppy, and short. I hacked at it in rehab because it was one thing that I could control. I can smell that there is concrete under the carpet. The tracking of slight indentations in the soil and the disturbance of dew on a grass blade. He would decorate everything that stood still and then some. I fixed my sight on a homey glow coming from a cabin in the woods, smelling faintly of saltwater taffy. The imprint of my boots lingered near the front door. Noticing a drop of dew on the silver blade of grass, I heard a moose eating from a distant apple tree. Yes, all this time I'd been going in the right direction. We bob along in the chop at the lowest speed our horsepower would allow, waving. I pictured the large family leading cops all over the park, looking for a child they feared was abducted. A stranger is in the bathroom with me, staring in between my legs to ensure the urine is my own. Like a spiritual octopus DJ. Mom's mount was a docile mare that didn't mind us girls yanking her mane the entire ride. I knew in a deep and profound way that everything that mattered to me before was trivial. I felt like God took a baseball bat to the back of my knees. I was falling with my eyes wide open. I was grateful. We don't talk about what they tell us in group, the statistics, that within the next year, several of us will leave and die. If you had to marry a foreigner, why couldn't you have married a nice Greek boy? In great-grandfather's book, a Jew from Brooklyn was as good as foreign. Not hopeful, not sad, just even. Speaking to all his cells, he reminded me of his father. We heard a scuffle out near the hutch, and the next morning discovered it had been busted open, and that was the end of the rabbits. It had been 40-odd years since I rode in the back seat of the plush Buick estate wagon as my father drove this same route home to Portland to visit his father. It was a time when you gave yourself to the music with no thought to what anyone else felt about your free expression, with Janis Joplin crooning inches away. That kind of thing was possible. My feet screamed for a sockless existence. Throughout dry season, sweat beads along your upper lip as you sip your freshly pressed papaya lime juice. Okay, okay, a prestige. I was the closest family member on both sides of the story. Her blonde hair was her best-kept secret. She had platinum blonde hair when she was younger, but later used the box, as she referred to it, to keep the gray away. The box of L'Oreal 9.5 Extra Light Ash Blonde was on the counter, waiting for her to apply it the next day. My eyelids felt like lizard skin. Papery blinks scratched my eyeballs. I reminded him that my sister was coming. He said, "But she isn't you." When I told him I was leaving before sunup, he said he wanted me to wake him up. I said that wasn't necessary. "I can sleep any time," he said. Do you feel the difference? Do you hear the difference? Those phrases you remember, right? And you can see them, and you can hear them, and sometimes you can smell them. And you wrote those. The same people who wrote the first words wrote the second ones. You just need to always do that. It doesn't mean that everything has to be elaborate and fancy. Some of them are simple. Some of them are really basic. But they're clear, and they're just real. Many of them are sentences that nobody else in the history of the universe has ever written. And that's what I want for you, is to tell the stories that haven't been said before, instead of repurposing the same old language. And I will say that our culture so immerses us in this. It's almost like there's a button on your typewriter that, you know, when you say the word heinous, you know the next word will be crime. And when you say the word brutally, you know the next word will be murdered. These are the automatic pilot phrases that we all go to. And we hear them on television. We really hear them on television and in the radio and in campaign speeches and in pep talks that coaches give before basketball games and in school classrooms and in graduation speeches that bad English teachers oversee kids' writing. But they're not the phrases that will make your writing memorable. And there is a suggestion that I always give when I present one of these lists, as I always do in one of my workshops, which is that you take this list, and even if the phrase was not yours, but especially if it was, you implement a substitution. So that, for instance, nurtured my children. What does that look like? Give me a scene. I sometimes suggest, in the world of tattoos, if there was ever a tattoo I would recommend for my writing students, it would say, like what? Give me an example. Show me a picture. An unreasonable person. What made that person that way? Cling to this identity. I can't see that. What does that mean? She still carried around wherever she went the picture of her as the prom queen in 1967. Entertaining stories. Boy, have we all heard entertaining stories. Give me some examples. You know, the story about the time he interested in politics. She started every morning listening to CNN. I don't know. That's not a thrilling sentence. But it is an example. It is a like what. I could go on and on, but I don't need to go on and on. I want you to look over that phrase
I actually recommend that you print it and put it over your desk where you write for a while, not as an example of what to do, but as a reminder of what not to do. I call this dead language, and I call that second list. This was a particularly great one, actually. It's one of the longest ones I've ever assembled from such a small group. I call the second one, and now for the good stuff. And it was great stuff. And incidentally, the fact that a certain sentence of yours, and I'm sure more than one, appeared on this list does not even mean that that sentence should stay in your piece of writing. That's how mean I am going to be. It's just a great sentence. It might not serve the purposes of the story that you intend to tell. And you could keep a file of all your great sentences. But what I'd rather that you know is simply that you can write sentences like that, and that more great sentences will come out of you. That's about all I have to say on that one, but I'm happy to talk about it. Is there anybody who didn't get why the first ones were? Every now and then, it hardly ever happens, but somebody said, oh, I thought that place where she said, reveled in my excitement was so great, or I loved bucolic landscape. I want to see it. I've been using this word for a few days now, interpretive language. When you tell me the landscape is bucolic, you deny me the pleasure of figuring it out for myself by seeing you describe it, and then I know, oh, that's a bucolic landscape. And I have a strong guess that the next work that you create will have a lot less of these phrases.
Joyce Maynard's podcast, Telling Your Story, can be found at joycemaynard.com. You'll find a new episode exploring different aspects of the art and craft of writing memoir every week. For more in-depth discussion of the writing process, check out Joyce's classes at creativelive.com, or better yet, join her at one of her in-person workshops. Details on this and much more at joycemaynard.com.